never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the 57 Skinon podcast, as I just made Philip jump.
You do that.
With enthusiasm.
That's it, exactly.
Look at this, we've got as many episodes as there are Heinz varieties. Aren't we great?
So, Jason is still off in France viewing the sights, so we're joined again by Darren.
Hello!
Yay.
He's now so...
I sense much enthusiasm.
I'm tired, hence coffee.
Putting the special into special guests.
You said that, not us.
I meant it entirely sincerely and unironically.
Yes. And we...
Had I said that, I would.
Yeah.
Oh, get on with
so,
it.
So, Darren, what have you been watching recently?
Very light week for me. Mostly just Goldfinger.
He's the man.
Go on. You can hit that note. You can hit that note.
I could, but the glass will crack and the dogs will howl.
Yeah, great Bond film. Quintessential Bond film, perhaps, one might argue. That said, it doesn't make a lick of sense. Not that
very few Bonds do.
Pussy galore on the screen.
Yeah, so Pussy Galore's Flying Circus, which you imagine is great fun for the whole family. I'm just imagining how you pitch that to your wife. You come home, you're like, hey, I saw a sign up. You want to take the kids to Pussy Galore's Flying Circus? But no, I mean, great film, fantastically constructed, beautiful action scenes, very iconic, and kind of established a lot of what we take around about the Bond films. But yeah, the plot, why do we need, two twin sisters who exist solely to be killed so Bond can maybe feel bad about them for 5 seconds before doing what he was going to do anyway?
I don't know. Same way you can ask, why does Bond essentially sex the lesbianism out of Pussy Galore?
Only in the book. The film's a lot more veiled about her lesbianism.
Yeah, but... as far as film fans are concerned, it is generally accepted that she is of that persuasion.
Yes.
But he's Bond, so he obviously can turn lesbians straight, isn't
yeah.
he? That's the kind of charisma and the power of his masculinity.
Yeah, no, and...
This is now a Seinfeld skit. I thought she was a lesbian. Nah, it didn't take.
But yeah, no, and particularly if you've read the actual Ian Fleming... Have you guys read some of the Ian Fleming books?
I've read some of the Ian Fleming books, but I can't remember Goldfinger.
Okay. Have you read, Live and Let Die?
Yes.
You know, you look at the film and you think, the film's a little politically insensitive. What would, take this honky out back and waste him? And the idea that, a government of a Caribbean country is also, drug-smuggling heroin dealers in Harlem.
And that's also okay to basically use cards,
tarot cards
to sleep just, with a 16-year-old girl.
Yeah. I mean, Roger Moore taught me everything I know. I'm going to be honest here. The book is even more racist, if you can imagine such a thing. Yes, he does. In the book, it's rather unexplicit. In the film, it's left implied when she says that Bond is not her type, or whatever. Until he fixes that. Because he's Bond. And it's great, because Goldfinger is really one of the first films where you see Bond not as, I think in Dr. No and in For Much About Love, he's sort of... He is your quintessential spy.
Mm.
But... around the time of Goldfinger, he becomes the expert in absolutely anything that might possibly come up related to the plot. There's a sequence where they're talking about Nazi gold, and all of a sudden he turns into, a whiskey expert. Or that wonderful scene where he's complaining, some things are not done, like drinking champagne at room temperature or listening to the Beatles without earmuffs. Because Bond is cool, kids. Bond is cool. But yeah.
No, but you could imagine that Sean Connery actually came in with the whiskey tasting being Scottish and the listening to Beatles at earmuffs because he's curmudgeon-y.
He's crouchy and old. Yeah. And also, just when
Even when he was young, he was old.
Well, it has the DB5.
It does. And
it has the scene with the laser.
Yeah,
and
it's odd job work.
That car chase through Pinewood.
Yeah. Yeah, but the car chase, that again, one of those great things that makes no sense. It relies on him, first of all, taking a wrong turn, and second of all, not driving his bulletproof car through the person pointing a gun at him.
And the henchman sitting in the passenger seat in the front.
Yes, and letting him drive his own car back. There are a lot of... and just happening to conveniently get a car with an ejector seat in it.
There is an Eddie Izzard sketch which points out pretty much all of these flaws.
Yeah.
Oh, you wouldn't sit in the front here with me, would you? It's very roomy.
It's, but no, and despite, despite all these problems, because you don't actually notice these problems unless you've watched it like a dozen times.
Even then, you don't care about these problems because
it's a great Bond.
It's so much fun.
Yeah. And the best of Bond is fun. So much fun that we'll overcome some glaring flaws.
Yeah, like you have the introductory sequence that is basically a mini movie of itself, where Bond like topples a heroin republic in like 3 minutes, with his tuxedo under his wetsuit.
In terms of like believable, or not so much believable, but a structured plot, Bond, Casino Royale is better.
Mm. Yes.
But Goldfinger is, it's a Bond movie.
Yeah, it's the Bond movie.
It sets down everything that became Bond.
Yeah. Well, it's the first Guy Hamilton film, isn't it?
Yeah.
And one might argue possibly the only really good Guy Hamilton Bond film, controversially perhaps.
Which are the ones that he do?
The Man with the Golden Gun.
It's definitely the best.
Live and Let Die.
Well, we'll give the moment to Golden Gun Scaramanga, so, you know.
And that great car chase, which if you cover your ears, is actually quite impressive.
Even though Live and Let Die is quite racially insensitive, I give it a very creepy vibe and teehee.
Yeah.
And Jane Seymour.
Everyone likes Jane Seymour.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Even if it is a little creepy, she's playing a 16-year-old.
Yes, that's
just...
And then I saw something else, but I can't remember it right now. So we'll probably circle back around that.
Perhaps. Who knows? Maybe I watched it.
Yeah.
Unlikely. Okay. I'm going to attempt a lightning round because you two completely sucked at it last week. Because I watched quite a bit. Well, for me anyway.
We're going to derail it. How quickly will we derail it?
Very quickly. All right. Let me put it this way. My first watch was a Richard Linklater film.
Oh, no, I'm not going to do that.
Oh, good. It was Fast Food Nation. The most inexplicable fictionalized adaptation of a non-fiction book. I mean, why? It makes no sense. Make a documentary. It would have been at least more enlightening, and I wouldn't have had to look at Greg Kinnear again. I'm not a Greg Kinnear fan.
Would you believe?
Altogether more fun, and, well, yeah, just more fun, was Coffee and Cigarettes, Jim Jarmusch's little... basically a series of skits centred around characters meeting over coffee and cigarettes. Starts off kind of slow with the first three sketches. There's like meeting between Roberto Benigni and Stephen Wright, then Tom Waits and Iggy Pop, then there's one with Steve Buscemi and a pair of twins, and the first few are fine, and then as it goes on it gets better and better and better. There's one where Cate Blanchett plays two characters, a pair of cousins, which is great. There's one where Bill Murray has coffee with Gizza and RZA of Wu-Tang Clan. Yeah.
As you do.
Yeah.
As you do. Yeah. And the crowning glory has to be a phenomenally funny sketch in which Steve Coogan and Alfred Molina play versions of themselves, where Molina has discovered that they may be related, and he's trying to establish a friendship on that basis, and Coogan is being... an arse and having none of us. It's great. I could see it being the foundation for the trip.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Quick derailing coming.
Go on.
What is the cigarettes film I'm thinking of when I think of the musical with James Gandolfini?
Romance and Cigarettes.
Romance and Cigarettes. Boom.
Not very good.
Not very good?
No.
Not very good.
But Jarmusch's Coffee and Cigarettes, much more fun. Just takes a little while to warm up and then you're away with it.
You do have to be in the humour for a Jim Jarmusch movie.
Yeah,
although,
I mean,
I'll never think I'll be ever in humor for that broken one.
A broken flower. Yeah. I hate that film so much. Yeah, I mean, they're all very determinedly paced.
That's a very eloquent way of putting it. Yeah.
Although, as Jarmusch films go, Coffee and Cigarettes is pretty efficient. It's only about an hour and a half, and if you don't like one skit, there's another one coming up. So, and all shot in gorgeous black and white, of course. Then, probably the best film I watched since last time, Close Up. Abbas Kiarostami's 1990. You thought I was talking about something else, didn't you?
No, I thought that was where you were going.
Well, okay, just in case anybody who hasn't seen it, how should I pitch this? Okay, the story is a man has been arrested for impersonating a filmmaker and lying his way into this rich family's house and befriending them under these false pretenses by saying, I'll give you a part of my next film, and they think he's a famous filmmaker.
It's a Tom Ripley type.
I would say, is this based on the fake Stanley Kubrick?
No. Okay. At least I don't believe it is. Okay. It's a similar kind of idea, but it's not the necessarily the crux of the film. Okay. It's just a basic plot point and it gets the thing going. Okay, so the film opens with this guy being arrested. But the film is comprised of, okay, these scenes with this story, and then it cuts back and forth between that plot, that plot line, and the trial of the man who was the guy. So he's arrested and he's placed under, he was charged for, I don't know, what is the technical term for a charge like that? It's a criminal offence, but what exactly is it?
Well, one would imagine fraud.
Okay, yeah. A kind of fraud, I would say. All right, so the footage of the trial is real, but the thing about the fictionalized version, sorry, the story, the stuff that Keir Starmer is filming himself, is that the people in the story are playing themselves. So, like, the impersonator is playing himself. The rich man, the rich woman, his family, they're all playing themselves. He convinced the authorities to let him film the trial. And then afterwards, he managed to convince everybody involved to let him film the rest of the story.
It's pretty impressive.
It is quite staggering to watch when you're watching the story jump back and forth between trial and the rest of the story. Because the trial is filmed under kind of very staged circumstances. The camera work is pretty poor, and whereas the rest of the story is a bit more polished. But it's the same characters, the same people, and you're kind of trying to draw the lines where does cinema end and reality begin, or vice versa. It's an extremely, extremely clever film, and it just toys with your head all the way through, and it really ropes you in. And this is the film that brought Kiarostami to a lot of Western attention, and he's enjoyed a reputation, well, before and since, as one of the greatest filmmakers working today. But this has to be his crown and glory. So yes, do watch.
Cool.
And let me think, now this is one I do want to talk about. A very strange film which I finally got around to seeing, Take This Waltz.
Oh, okay, yep.
Yeah, this is the Sarah Polley film starring Michelle Williams and Seth Rogen. They play a very happily married couple until one day she meets up with a guy. She's returning from a work trip on a plane, and she meets this guy, played by Luke Kirby, and they hit it off, and they realise there's a clear chemistry. But it's all very complicated, because not only are they travelling back to the same city, he actually lives on her street. So there's this really strong attraction between them, and even though she still really loves her hubby, and it's all so nice and warm and safe and comfortable, and yet there's this strong sexual attraction between her and the other guy that it's, you know, you're not quite sure where it's going to go. And I'm sure you're thinking, yeah, but I do. And no, you probably don't. It's a film which takes a lot of risks, and by the end of it, it was really strange to see just how much likability in its characters and its plotting it was willing to risk. I don't know whether it was trying to... I guess it was trying to make a point. At what cost, I don't know, but I found it a very interesting film, well worth a watch, just because you'll think you know where it's going to go, but that's not going to happen. Either of you seen it?
Yeah, I saw it when it came out.
And what did you think?
I thought it was okay. I wasn't blown away by it. No. Mm.
I wouldn't think it's any great shakes as far as... Like, it's not necessarily an exemplar of a rom-com, but then again, it's only turning up in rom-com's clothing.
No, that's true. Yeah.
Doesn't really sound like a rom-com.
No, it's relationship dynamics.
Yeah. No. Yeah. In fact, it's not really calm at all.
It's like the Observe and Report of rom-coms, is what I'm gathering here.
It's not bad.
No, it's not.
It's a big difference. Okay.
It's just quite serious.
Very serious.
Yeah.
In fact, it gets quite dark sometimes.
Yeah, which is... It doesn't make it the easiest film to watch.
No.
So, yeah.
I think the way it was marketed before and since has not helped, because I picked up this DVD cover and it's all like, oh, look, bright and shiny and lovely, and there's smiley Michelle Williams and happy Seth Rogen, oh, everything's going to be lovely, and oh, no, it's not.
Surely Smiley Michelle Williams should have been your first clue there.
Because everything's going to go to shit after that.
Yeah. Can I think about a happy Michelle Williams film? Off the top of my head. And by me, I mean you guys.
Oh, there has to be one. Yeah. Surely.
Yeah, Michelle Williams' presence in a film is generally quite... Oh, hey, lay it on me.
Wizard of Oz. Oz is great and powerful.
That's not a happy film.
No, but she's happy, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, playing against time.
Yeah.
Not a happy film.
No.
I go to my happy place when I find that on, and it's far away from that film.
The opening of it, though, with the change in dynamics and... Oh.
I actually quite like the direction of it.
And then Frankenstein.
Yeah. Well, and then the script starts playing out.
Whatever tone it aims for, I think Michelle Williams just needs to do more comedy because she actually has a great time in, say, like Synecdoche, New York. You smell weird. How do I smell? Like you're menstruating. I don't know. I don't menstruate. How can I smell like I'm menstruating? You tell me. It's a great film. That's all I'm saying. Synecdoche, New York, that is. Take this waltz.
Yeah.
Yeah, just brace yourself for that one. And I think that was about the height of my viewing.
Have you remembered during what?
Oh, Muppets Most Wanted.
Yeah.
Oh, no wonder you forgot.
See, that's exactly why I forgot it. Perfectly serviceable family entertainment.
It's
not bad. It's just not particularly good. It's like, it's grand. It's unobjectionable.
I've got objections. Okay. Mostly Ricky Gervais.
As far as like the damage that Ricky Gervais could do to a film, he did not do to that film. Like, you've seen The Invention Lying, right?
No, and I'm not going to.
Good call.
No, don't.
Yeah, don't. Really, don't, really see, don't. Don't see. Don't see The Invention of Lying.
There was another one.
Ghost Town is that not was the one bad. It's not. You know, it's the best movie Paolini's made.
Whoa.
Bad Boys. We're going with Bad Boys.
Yeah, probably. Speaking of Tia Leone, that's a nice segue. I watched Deep Impact.
See, Muppets Most Wanted can't even hold a conversation. Yeah. Let's talk about Deep Impact.
Yeah, so I rewatched Deep Impact, and that's a bad film.
It's not.
when you're weaker than the opening Michael Bay film, it's...
It's better than Armageddon.
It's different than Armageddon because it's studying something different.
I know, and it suffers by comparison.
Yeah. Armageddon is the bigger, brasher one.
Yes,
right? Jupiter.
This is much more about the impact of it on society. Yeah. Well, but not actually the impact on society.
No.
But which will be a way more interesting movie
than what it turns out to be.
Yeah,
the image that comes to my head is James Cromwell on a boat.
That's at the very start.
That is at the very start. Yeah. That's all I remember from the film. Oh, Morgan Freeman's president?
Morgan Freeman is president.
Which is always a plus. Yeah. Elijah Wood, isn't it?
Elijah Wood is the guy who discovered the comet that's going to destroy the Earth.
Is Robert Duvall in it?
Robert Duvall is the old guy who is the only person to have landed on the moon, and therefore is the guy who has to land on the comet.
He is the Bruce Willis of Deep Impact.
Which I think tells you all you need to know about the difference in the two films, right?
Yeah, Deep Impact is clearly better.
Deep Impact hasn't got the name cast that the other has.
But it has a lot of other things over Armageddon. I hate Armageddon with a passion. I'm not necessarily saying Deep Impact is good, but it just does a lot of things better.
It's the Dante's Peak to Volcano.
Yeah, exactly.
they're both terrible films.
Dante's Peak is better. Dante's Peak has at least...
Rene Russo, right?
No, Linda Hamilton.
Linda Hamilton. Oh, sorry, okay, sorry. I actually got the two confused. Pierce Brosnan over Tommy Lee Jones?
It's a better film.
All right.
Relatively speaking.
It's like the Sophie's Choice of Volcano movies. Don't pick Joe versus the Volcano. Don't pick Joe versus the Volcano.
Don't pick Pompeii. Anything but Pompeii.
Why wouldn't you pick Joe versus the Volcano? It's got Tom Hanks.
And Meg Ryan. I mean, how could it possibly suck? Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't tried. There hasn't been like a Jonesance of trying to like critically reevaluate that. Like the cable guy seems to have been rehabilitated recently.
The cable guy deserves rehabilitating, though.
It's better than people give it credit for. I'm not sure it's a good film, but it's better than the trashing it got when it was released.
It's interestingly warped.
Yes, it's. I think it's.
It is pitch black comedy. Yeah. It is so black.
And also, it is Matthew Broderick, so that's never a good sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No refuting
that, I noticed.
But, yes, I know.
Well, now, War Games.
And Ferris Bueller.
Yeah, so, young Matthew Broderick.
Old Asian marker.
Yeah. But.
So, with a few exceptions, no.
Yeah. Don't forget Tower Heist.
I never saw it.
Good.
I saw
good
that,
call.
I saw that in cinema.
Yeah, it's not a good film.
No,
but yeah, so back to the Armageddon and Deep Impact thing. Yeah,
yeah. No,
so
well, we went way out there.
We did, but it was great.
Deep Impact was yeah. So that was one of the films that I rewatched. Yeah.
And what was the other?
The other was I rewatched Wolf of Wall Street.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I think it's great.
I do think it's great. I
like it. Yeah. I have problems with it, but I do like it. It's very entertaining.
Directors like a third of the age of Scorsese do not have that energy.
No, they don't.
No, God, I don't know.
It's exhausting watching it.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. I think that's a plus.
Like everybody in that film is clearly on some kind of
caffeine related or caffeine or stronger.
Well, something. I don't know what DiCaprio's on, but he goes through the roof and just keeps going.
It's,
and he's great.
The Quaalude scene is.
Yes.
That is a masterclass in physical comedy.
Yeah, it's
great.
It's 5 minutes of just genius.
Yeah. But I mean, even the little touches, like. Even the little
brilliant.
Touches like having the infomercial interrupted by the cops arriving. I think Scorsese sort of, and particularly it was written by what's his
Terrence
name?
Winter.
Terrence Winter, yeah. From which is really odd because when you think of Terrence Winter, you think of Boardwalk Empire and you're like, where was that energy, that enthusiasm? And I say that as somebody who didn't mind the show.
Boardwalk Empire is boring as all hell.
Yeah,
thank
you.
I gave up on it halfway through the first season. It bored me so.
How can a thing that has Michael Shannon in it not make me want to watch it?
He's the best thing about it, and then he sort of disappears. After the first season, he just sort of floats around because you can't get rid of Michael Shannon. even Batman versus Superman can't get rid of Michael Shannon.
Poor Michael Shannon.
Yeah, I imagine he's being well compensated for it.
I should hope so.
But yeah, like you look at even the little details of Wolf of Wall Street, I think it's fantastic. And I think it's one of those, yeah. I really didn't like the Moral Guardian sort of argument that sort of came out afterwards.
Oh,
it's
bullcrap. But they didn't really need the cameo. The cameo was
too on the nose. Yeah.
Although it does reinforce just how good DiCaprio's performance and the makeup is.
Yeah, no, that's
great. By the time he says his last line in that film, sell me this pen.
Yeah.
After everything we've gone through with him in that film, you're still thinking, okay, I'll try. it's a great performance.
And the star was born, Margot Robbie.
That was up there with like Cameron Diaz's entrance in The Mask.
Yeah.
She was great. I do look forward to seeing her in Suicide Squad.
Really? I can't tell if you're being sarcastic. Like
I'm looking forward to seeing her in it. I'd like to see what Leto is going to do with the Joker, and then after that, I can take it.
Really, you're not going to like Jay Courtney as Captain Boomerang? Doesn't tickle your fancy?
I get the feeling we'll be talking about him when we talk about Terminator Genesis in the top 10, but that's another story.
Right. So I also rewatched the first Harry Potter.
Not very
good. Oh my god, they can't act.
Ron is the strongest of the three, from what I recall, right?
Which is quite odd.
A qualifier, yeah. It's also quite a qualifying statement as well.
They're just lucky they have
Coltrane.
They are lucky they have a hell
the
of a
adult,
grown-up
yeah.
cast.
The
grown-up cast
is
amazing.
God.
Like, imagine, like, I remember watching the Harry Potter films and thinking, why are there the kids in it? I mean, come on, I want to be in the staff room. That's where I want to be.
That's going to be fixed with the...
The Eddie Redmayne, Fantastic Creatures.
Yeah, Fantastic Creatures, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Yeah, see, on the other hand, Eddie Redmayne. But we'll talk about him when we get to the new releases.
Two-time Academy Award winner.
You think?
Yeah, we're hedging it now. A Hanksian performance, really.
Oh, dear, don't. Insult him.
You're not hankering for some.
I was going to go as like a Tootsie type performer.
controversial.
Anyway, so we'll move on to the news.
Next.
Away from what I've been watching recently. Nope. So, big news.
What's that?
Oh, Pinocchio.
You want to take his face off?
Oh, yeah. I did. I rewatched Face Off. Yes, because I
really?
Told Darren earlier. Yeah.
Right.
I also rewatched Mad Max Fury Road. So.
Yeah.
Oh,
good choices.
That's the best.
Both
that's
good choices. Oh, come on. Face Off is great.
Face Off is ludicrous fun.
I want to take
like looking into a mirror.
Same night.
No.
Yeah. What? That is like the best night in human history.
Matt Maxbury Rod followed by Face Off. That was
I want to take
guess.
His face.
That was great night.
Oh, it really was. Or, I hate to see you go, but I'd love to watch you leave. Somehow, I can't deliver it with the same level of creepiness as John Travolta. It's
John Travolta's Nick Cage impression is a thing of beauty.
It really is. And I'd argue it's the best John Woo film. Oh, the best of the American ones, anyway.
Yeah, that's got to go hard for it.
Yeah, that's, yeah. I know.
And I will stand up for a lot of Mission Impossible 2.
Really? The really? Two-hour-long shaving commercial?
A lot of, not all of it. Okay. Some of it is absolutely terrible.
It's quite possibly the worst thing that Ronald D. Moore and Brannon Braga wrote, and they wrote a lot of Star Trek.
I like the cliffhanger opening, but after that, zzz.
Now, there are some great action sequences in it. It's, the plot is utter nonsense. But yeah.
I liked it when the doves showed up.
Doug Ray Scott passed on playing Wolverine for that.
I believe it was contractual, wasn't it? Did it overrun?
Probably.
But yeah, you imagine Doug Ray Scott is looking at this from like his Doctor Who guest appearance, looking at you, Jackman, going,
That could have been me.
I could have made 16 superhero films in the past 10 years. But hey, then I might have been in Australia, so it all balances out.
Okay, the news. What's the news?
The news. The Galway Film Flat ended on Sunday, so it ended with the award ceremony.
Ooh.
Yes. So Song of the Sea took home the big prize because it had its premiere one day before its release at the flat.
Oh, that was wise.
Yeah, which is just mind-bogglingly silly to have the premiere anywhere other than Dublin. And I mean this from a marketing point of view. I don't mean it as a Dublin-centric person. If you want to get like buzz
attention.
And notice and attention, you have it. You bring in.
It to the Savoy,
and you bring in the stars.
You do.
Yeah.
Bring in Brendan Gleeson. Bring in Fionnuala Flanagan.
Exactly. Yeah. David Rawl.
And bring in whatever Z-lister is about that day, and I'm sure there are plenty of them because
the cast of California. That's the only way I discovered California existed because I was at one of these things and I was like, "What? Why is that person glowing?"
Was it the opening of the Omnimax in Ratmines?
It might have been.
Yeah, because God Almighty, tonight they were all there.
Yeah, I was like, "Why is that person glowing?" And then somebody explained it to me.
I still don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Oh, it's a reality TV show.
Oh, stop there. Yeah.
The name tells you all you need to know.
Jersey Shore,
but in Tala.
Must.
And we say this as Dublin-centric people.
Must. Hold tongue. Move on.
But yeah, no, I think, yeah, if you're a marketing person, particularly for the film, and I think the idea of having it tour the world and then come home is better on page than in practice.
Timing is everything as well.
Yes. Should have been week after Minions.
Two weeks after Minions.
One week before Inside Out.
Two weeks before Inside Out. But still.
But like family films have that hold.
Yeah.
You know, like Minions is not going anywhere
and
until the end
be...
of time.
We will come back to Song of the Sea's box office performance when we get to the box office.
We will.
Right. Sorry.
Best Irish documentary went to the new Snackbox Films film, Older Than Ireland. So they're the guys who made The Irish Pub, which was on TV on Monday. Yeah. So The Irish Pub is fine, but Older Than Ireland is a documentary that centres on centenarians. Essentially, what they have is they've found all these people who are older than the state, and they've interviewed them about their lives, which means these are people.
They've watched the state grow up.
Yeah, but these people are like living history books.
Yeah.
You know, so that will be very, very interesting.
I'm quite interested to see how we approach that centenary in terms of,
a film project.
In terms of film, in terms of television, in terms of like...
Well, After 16 has its people. Then Rebellion, 1916, is the RTE's attempts. And then there's The Rising, the film that's now cast Liam Neeson's son as Michael Collins. Michael Neeson is...
that was great, great cast. You ever came up with that idea?
It's quite clever.
Yeah.
Clever, I think that's abysmal.
That's your Michael Collins shared universe coming into being there.
Then the best
Kitty Kieran gets her own spin-off.
Yeah.
Best first Irish feature went to Mark Noonan's Euroglee 2, so that's out next week, next Friday, the 24th. It had an Offaly sort of preview screening last night because Mark Noonan's from Offaly, and so it was.
How'd it go down?
It went down quite well.
Good.
But then it was playing to a local crowd, so, and a lot of it is set there, so.
Ah.
You were going to have that. So this has got Aidan Gillen in it, Lauren Kinsella, and everybody who has seen Eurovue 2 says that Lauren Kinsella is excellent in it. But she is like a...
I've seen the trailer. She's clearly got a lot of...
Something
to watch.
Grit. Yeah, so... Then the Bingham Rae New Talent Award was given to Catherine Kennedy, the producer of My Name is Emily.
Ah.
And My Name is Emily also picked up Best Cinematography for Seamus Deasy's work on it. So, I mean, that went down quite well as well. That was the opening film. Then there was a number of animation awards. So the Don Quixote Award for Best Animation went to Stephen McNally's Meanwhile. Best Animated Sequence in a Short Film went to Geist, which is directed by Sean Mullen, Ben Harper, and Alex Sherwood. Best First Short Animation went to Unhinged, which is written and directed by Tom Caulfield. Then, because The Fla is an Oscar-qualifying short film festival, it puts forward two. It puts forward the Best Short Drama, and it puts forward Best Short Animation. The Best Short Drama went to Phil Sheeran's North, that's named after Tiernan McBride. And the Best Short Animation, which is named after James Horgan, went to Maurice Joyce's Violet. So the two of them now are now Oscar eligible.
Cool.
Yep.
And only wish them luck.
Yeah.
Though Irish animations have all got nominations in the past.
Yeah,
got good form.
Last year we had Boogaloo and Graham. I mean, Northern Ireland's Boogaloo and Graham went forward as two the Oscar nominees. So, and SLR was another Northern Ireland short was on the shortlist. Then the other short film awards went to Queen the Plough for Best Documentary, that's directed by Cara Holmes. Tristan Henhugh, who's a great actor, his feature debut, or his short debut today, which was produced by Paddy Slattery, that won Best First Short Drama. Then Hannah Quinn's My Bonnie won Best Cinematography in a Short Film. And the FLA Pitching Award, so this is where you basically have to pitch the idea for a film, went to Luke Morgan for Utopia. He recently had a film play at the in Cannes Short Film Corner. The Woman Festival went to Luke and Roger by Kevin O'Brien, and Park Pictures' I Am Jesus won the first Short Film Slam. So the Short Film Slam was really interesting. Basically, they played first like 2-3 minutes of a film, and then you decided whether or not to watch the rest of it. The audience voted whether or not to watch the rest of the film.
Oh, I've watched whole features where I wished that were the format. I'm not
sure that's a little bit like putting a remote control in your cinema seat.
They did try that before. That was a trend briefly in the mid-90s.
Yes.
It didn't work.
Yes.
So there was 4 Galway Hooker Awards and a number of international awards. But the Galway Hooker Awards, given it's like the Volta here, so it's the highest kind of thing that gives out. So they gave it to Mohsen Makhmalbaf, the Iranian director, to Pete Docter and Jonas Riviera, who were there for Inside Out, and to Michal Omelik, who is the commissioning director of TG Cahir.
Yeah.
So
that is good.
The FLA, sadly, over for another year. But we have another festival announcement. DIFF has set its dates.
It's back to February.
It's going back to February, and
which
it's
is good.
February 18th to 28th next year.
Great. It's going back to clashing with Glasgow as opposed to being a month later than it.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It means the surprise film will be like 2 hours earlier than the Glasgow screening of the same surprise film.
True.
I say that loving the festival. Dear.
Hopefully it'll be better than last year's one. God, good kill. Terrible.
I didn't get to see all of it, but
if you take all of the Dublin Film Festival surprise films and put them on a chart, if
Good Kill is a little above the average, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
It's no Welcome to the Punch.
Oh dear,
Muppets Most Wanted.
Muppets Most Wanted.
The Escapist was the best of the recent lot, I think.
Probably. Hard to know.
So
they announced announced their a special screening of Trainwreck. So
Amy Schumer.
Yeah, so Amy Schumer is going to be over, as is Judd Apatow as well.
And Bill Hader.
And Bill Hader. So yeah.
Pretty great.
The two stars and the director. So that is
actually very excited about that.
Star studded. That they put the tickets on sale and tickets were gone in about 90 minutes.
That's because they probably didn't... Yeah, they probably had to save so many for the Z-list.
Hey now, don't be cynical.
What's my Twitter handle again?
Everybody knows and loves Amy Schumer, right? And she actually should. You should look up. She got an Emmy nomination today.
For Inside Amy Schumer, which is...
Yeah, which is a fantastic sketch show, as these things go. In fact, 12 Angry Men Inside Amy Schumer is an amazing just piece of art. Oh, come on. Real mature, Niall. Real mature.
How do you not laugh at that?
You say it very often, and eventually it becomes numbing. Yeah. But yeah, no, if anybody out there is looking for a recommendation, try 12 Angry Men Inside Amy Schumer. Mm-hmm. It's done in the style of 12 Angry Men. It's
no way!
As you may have deduced, sort of eschewing the sketch show thing. But it's got a great cast. Jeff Goldblum's in it. And okay, Paul Giamatti. Yeah, there we go.
Oh, I gotta see this one.
Kumail Nanjiani. Great cast.
So, that's, yeah, so that was...
That was the fly, and that's Diff. And Diff, what's next?
Richard Armitage has joined the cast of Jared Butler's Brain on Fire. So Brain on Fire started filming during the week, and Richard Armitage was the has been announced to play the father of Chloe Grace Moretz's character in it. So, I broke it, nobody else has, and today the Deadline and Hollywood Reporter has it.
Are they quoting you?
No, oh. Of course they're not. Of course. They're quoting the Broad Green Pictures who are behind the film. They issued a press release to say that also Carrie-Anne Moss has joined.
Excellent. Are you up in Armitage about this?
Carrie-Anne Moss. Now there's an actress I wonder where she's been. Yeah,
Carrie-Anne Moss, Richard Armitage, and Chloe Grace Moretz, Jenny Slate. This is
Charlize Theron.
Charlize Theron is producer.
She's in it, doesn't she?
She's definitely attached as producer. There is no talk of her having.
She's involved. That's all I need to know.
Really, Aeon Flux.
Okay, everybody has a
yeah.
Thank you. Anyway,
Hancock. Yeah, the conversation from before the podcast.
Yes. Yeah, so we still love you.
I mean, Gerard Bart's. That's. Yeah, he's doing well for himself there with that.
Yeah,
cast.
That's a great cast.
Yeah, so it's filming in Vancouver and it'll film in
like New everything York. Does well.
Then the last bit of news is probably the biggest bit of news. The film board is going to be renamed.
Oh yes, I heard about this because this got quite a lot of mentions on Twitter. Obviously.
Yeah, so Irish Film Board, Borscht Lán Héireann, is changing its name to Screen Ireland.
I think I'll echo all those Twitter sentiments when I say you're what.
Well,
why?
It's step one in a plan to well.
Is it a 12-step program?
We would hope that it's a plan to broaden the scope of the film board to include things other than film, to include more animation, to include games and multimedia.
Broaden the scope. I don't think it has the money for that.
And that's one of the other steps that's required is to up its budget and to.
I like the idea of the whiteboard. What can we do on this list?
Well, we start. Yeah.
I'm still getting Guardian and BBC News notifications on my phone about the Greek austerity talks. I don't think that's got to be high on anybody's list of priorities. But good luck to Screen Ireland. Or
yes. Well, you say that as if anything we talk about on this podcast is going to measure up to like the Greek bailout.
Well, it's just that in particular sounds like a bit. What?
Right,
Amy Schumer is coming to Dublin, but that's not as important as Iran's nuclear arsenal. Song of the Sea is not as important as that helicopter that fell down in Leitrim. Oh yeah,
the helicopter crashed into the back of a pub.
It caused severe.
Now, there's Screen Ireland's first project. Somebody get a script.
And there's Bruce Willis in it. he killed a helicopter with a pub.
The rock was piloting the helicopter. He stole it to rescue people.
Yeah. Causing severe structural damage.
Yes.
Oh, I think we just should we end this here and we'll just start writing the script.
Screen Ireland, anyway, apparently it was one of the things that Bill Hurley wanted to do was to rebrand it, to give it to show that it had a focus away from film. It doesn't hurt the British Film Institute, even though they have
the American Film Institute.
There was a quite brilliant one on Twitter that Radio Times sticks to its guns. True. So,
oh, then again, that's not necessarily comparing like with like, because the BFI only has that remit because the UK Film Council was shut down.
Yeah, but again,
it's all the UK Film Council. It's true. It's all. I don't know.
It's a nice statement of intention, although acting on intention is a better statement of intention.
Yes, indeed.
So it needs more than a name change, but
it's a start.
It is a start. So.
Should they have screened the names better?
Scallan Éireann is what it is in Gaelic. So.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
you were almost sitting on that domain name.
The thing is, I looked up the domain name Screen Ireland as soon as they announced it, just to see, and they've had it since 2013. So
that's been a long time coming.
Yeah, it's been planning for a while. So, right, on to the top 10.
Oh boy.
At 10.
The point where Phil gets most enthusiastic in the program.
You'd be surprised.
At 10, it's The Longest Ride.
Hey!
Yeah.
Who doesn't love a Nicholas Sparks adaptation?
Me.
Yes, anyone.
The Notebook is the least bad.
And that's really that saying
something. It's like having the least bad form of hepatitis.
Well, this looks pretty inoffensive. It'll be like the last one because it'll be forgotten as soon as it's out of the cinema.
Scott Eastwood.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. I'm trying to remember what the last one was. Oh, it was Michelle Monaghan and James Marsden.
Oh, God.
Everyone loves James Marsden.
No, I've recently discovered a lot of people hate James Marsden.
Hi there!
How do you hate... Like, what has he done?
I don't hate James Marsden. He is on what I have now become known as my meh list. When I see him, I'm like, oh, God. I just
No. That's far too enthusiastic a response for a meh list. You have to go,
yeah. He's not quite Jai Courtney, but he's...
Oh, no, come on. Harsh.
Yeah, in order for, Marsden to generate an emotional response, you'd have to do something like cut ahead of me in Starbucks or something. That would get a stronger emotional reaction.
Yeah, but Longest Ride, that's... Good God, that's grossed nearly €400,000. How did that happen?
Because for something different in the market. You know, there is...
Until the next one comes along, I'm sure that'll be churning its way into cinemas very soon.
There's always a spark of creativity there.
Oh,
God.
You need is it to be lightly raining somewhere, Malikin.
There's always
looking,
with a plantation.
A guy standing down a boat with his dog.
And then she appears on the strand and he goes over and cups her beautiful face.
And it's okay because there's an elderly relative who will give them an estate where they can be alone together.
Yeah, he's got something hidden in his past and she needs to find out what.
But it's never something dark or ominous. Never something too dark. But he always blames himself for it.
Yes.
Yeah. Bonus points if he works a manual labor job to pay to make up for his perceived.
Or he's a returning soldier.
Yes.
Yes.
Bonus points in his
Or
if he's
all of them, yeah.
or a Coast Guard who lost a man and now has, you know.
Through no fault of his own.
No. Just through the savagery of the sea.
God, get on with it.
Zac Efron was in The Brave One, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. You could essentially write these yourself.
there's your money-making plan. Yep. There's your Screen Ireland plan. Just get the staff cranking out one of these.
I'd be surprised one of them hasn't been set in Ireland.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, yeah.
Leap Year 2.
Yeah.
The Nicholas Sparks.
Yeah. The
Hell, right as a drama, it'll still probably be funnier than the original Leap Year.
You can't compete with the on-screen chemistry of Matthew Good and Amy Adams.
You can't compete with a film that takes 3 days to get from Cork to Dublin.
Matthew Good as an Irishman. And I say that as somebody who liked Matthew Good in Stoker.
Oh, he's good. He's creepy.
Yeah.
I like Stoker a lot.
Yeah.
I don't like Matthew Good.
Is he also on the mad list or does he get bumped up?
No, he's also on the mad list.
You would say it's not all good then.
No.
Okay.
Next!
Next. At 9...
Love and Mercy.
Yes, Love and Mercy. This is the Brian Wilson story. So you liked this.
I did, and I'm disappointed it's not
so
at least a little higher.
Yeah.
Only 17,500 opening weekend. It didn't open wide, and it didn't have any huge name stars. John Cusack and Elizabeth Banks would be the biggest.
Yeah, and it opened at a time where cinemas are chocked full of blockbusters and kids' films, and screen scheduling for it was never going to be a priority.
No,
for...
but it did get into the top 10 as a piece of counter-programming. So, I'll give it that, and I think it deserves a little love. I mean, it's not... As far as biopics go, it makes some efforts to try and escape the tropes. It doesn't entirely succeed, but it wins just by virtue of some great performances, Paul Dano especially,
yeah,
and a really a nice look. Shot beautifully.
And great soundtrack, as you might imagine from a Brian Wilson biopic.
It's about Brian Wilson composing Pet Sounds. Who'd have thought? Like I said, it has a bit more bite than most biopics. So it's well worth a watch.
That said, yeah, I have difficulty watching a musical biopic after watching Tui Cox.
Hard.
It's a great, I think it's a massively underrated comedy.
John C. Reilly, can really go wrong.
Yeah, that's it.
John C. Reilly, while at the FLA, playing multiple nights of his music with his band, also announced a Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Woo!
Yeah.
Wow, that's like every possible win. There is no bad word in that sentence.
I hope he's going to wreck it.
Yeah.
At 8, it's Spy.
It's glad to see it's still there.
Yes. Mega business.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now it should finish with over 1.1 million, which I'm thrilled about because, as I said before, it is a good, fun little flick.
Yeah.
And it bodes well for Ghostbusters.
It does.
Yes.
And after all the fuss about the first pictures, oh my god, it's Ghostbusters, but they're women? Who let women be in this thing? Oh, menace.
Oh, come on. I like that.
They're hilarious, aren't they?
Well, in fairness, Dan Aykroyd didn't help matters when he was like, it's okay, but I'm going to make my own separate man film. My own separate man Ghostbusters. Until they were like, okay, do you want to be in our film, Mr. Aykroyd?
Okay, then.
And he was like, yeah, okay. That's just...
Oh, bless. At 7, it's Amy.
Now, speaking of musical true stories.
I'm really surprised. I'm really impressed that
2%
it's holding on.
Drop.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal performance for a documentary.
Well, it's got a lot of attention just by virtue of, well, besides the fact that it is, you know, the Amy Winehouse story, and it's one that people will be, they'll know the basic details about, and it is very tragic.
Yeah.
And this has got a lot of attention as well, just by virtue of its record-breaking opening weekend in the UK and here. And I'm glad it's there because it is an excellent film and a great tribute to an artist we lost far too soon.
Yeah.
At 6.
Uh-huh.
We're going to talk about this one,
I
imagine.
Yes, I believe so. It's disappointingly at 6. It's Song of the Sea.
See, the more you keep talking like this, the more it reinforces my viewpoint on Song of the Sea. So I'll let you two talk about this some more. I will interject on occasion to sound grouchy.
Yeah, so Song of the Sea is a beautifully realised Irish folktale. It is, and I mean, it is, it's gorgeous.
It is.
A gorgeous looking film. It's simplistic.
Yes.
But it's actually quite dour to begin with.
That's true too.
Yeah, but it is beautiful and it is deserving of a wider audience.
Yeah, I mean, I think the animators, they just a slightly better script next time. That should be the look of the film. It is superb.
But I mean, like, you say that as if like the quality of the script had an effect on the box office.
It had an effect on me.
When we come to number one, you'll understand that the quality of the script, actually, the quality of the script is obviously better.
Oh, I know that. I know that. I suppose.
And we say that coming from a world where Jurassic World has been number one for how many weeks now? Or was number one for how many weeks?
Enough.
Spoiler alert, people listening to the top 10.
Jurassic World is like the fifth highest grossing film of all time.
Fastest movie to $1 billion. Yeah, I think it's safe to say script has very little bearing on
I know, that's just, well, that was my bugbear with Song of the Sea.
Yeah, so Song of the Sea.
But in terms of it, like, in terms of its box office performance, though, it's underwhelming considering the factors at play.
Yeah, so yeah. Song of the Sea had a number of things going against it. So coming out 2 weeks after Minions is a problem. Coming out 2 weeks before Inside Out is a problem. Because
Coming out in summer, basically.
Because the marketing is saturated at that point. In the particular market that you're aiming at, Disney and Universal have media bodies that are going to eclipse anything that you can do. Now, Studio Canal,
they're a reputable.
They're reputable, but they're not the best when it comes to advertising certain things, like or targeting their marketing in the right way. But they do know how to do animation because they had Paddington and they had Shaun the Sheep.
And they did well.
Yeah. So
Paddington
and they were scheduled.
Paddington came out in December. Shaun the Sheep came out earlier this year.
That's when you had guns. For this that would have worked best
March.
Was no April.
Oh yeah.
Easter.
Aha. Yeah. It would have been just off the Oscars. Its nomination there.
So it would have been less. Just over a month after that, and
I'm trying to think, your competition then would have been, Home wouldn't have been out yet. You would have had that one about the Ark, 2x2.
No,
but
2x2
that wasn't
that. It came out May 1st.
Okay.
So
Cinderella would have been your closest.
It would have been
Cinderella. And that's a live action one. So
and that was
separate.
Trailing at that point.
Yeah.
If you had it aimed at the second week of April.
Yeah.
So it would have been a clearer time.
Would have been
forward.
A win. So. Easily there.
I'm just going to say this. Any company hoping to release in Ireland should probably talk to Niall first.
Yeah, I can't agree with
that. My suggestion would have been just throw a dart at the board there, at the calendar there, and we'll figure it out.
I mean, would you believe, when it comes to Irish cinema, Niall knows his stuff.
Yeah, what are the odds? It's like he runs a website or something like that.
Yeah, so it had a number of things that worked against it. So, I mean...
Toured the world as well, so it's on DVD and
stuff.
Yeah,
the Blu-ray and DVDs are already out in America, which means that there is a very serviceable copy of it available quite easily online if you're that way inclined.
Or even an online order of it.
You could order it off, well, hell, go to Amazon.com.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, it's just, yeah.
And I mean, it earned 42,200 opening weekend. It should be doing at least double that.
See, the problem is now that it's in Cineworld and the likes of those places, it's now gone to 2 showings per day at 10 and at 12.
That's no good.
You
that's
know,
that's
into
like
second week. So
like
no
Minions will be showing at those times like 6 weeks from now.
Yeah, there's no evening screenings now. And
Which is...
Even on a Sunday. Saturday and Sunday, they're the times. So you don't have an afternoon.
You don't get the kids out. Yeah, how are you going to get the kids out out of bed at 9 o'clock in the morning to go see Song of the Sea?
If you're Niall, you could manage it.
if we were all Niall, it would be a better world.
Junior's awake because he had like 7. So,
he is only about, 11 weeks old.
Yes.
And I mean, I was talking to somebody who was one of like the 7 people to attend a screening of Song of the Sea over the weekend. And she was saying that basically it was her and mostly adults.
Yeah, that's one of the other things that's happening with the marketing is that it's being sort of aimed. They're all, with all the 5 stars and 4 star reviews and all the rest, and people are talking about Ghibli and things like that, which is not
more
for
kids. Like,
So.
And besides, if you show kids, say, a picture of Song of the Sea and a picture of Minions, I know which one they're going to go for.
Yeah, but I mean, Minions has the advantage there in terms of being a massive property. I mean, if you show them Inside Out, let's say, for example. I think Inside Out would be
Inside
a good
Out
example.
Is more colourful.
Yeah, that's it. It's more... So, yeah.
But there is a way to play that...
To kids.
To kids. And I don't know.
We haven't seen it. So, there you go. It hasn't happened. Oh, well.
Yep. And then at 5...
Magic Bam!
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 I was waiting for that. It's Magic Mike XXL.
Oh, yeah.
Darren's singing pony. Well, there you go.
Well, that's what the listeners are hearing. They can't see what's really happening here. Bow. 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 Bow.
Darren, put your top back on.
I can't find it. I threw it away.
Niall, give back his top.
No, it's mine. I shall wear it
like a badge of honor. Perfectly serviceable, little too long for its own good. I'm surprised. It's a story about a bunch of male strippers who travel the country giving smiles to women across the country. I'm amazed that there isn't a sequence where like they meet a girl whose mother is like falsely imprisoned and they have to do like a stripper infiltration of the prison to break her out, like a stripper jailbreak. That is all that the film is missing.
Wow.
I'm just going to pitch that. That's Magic Mike 3. Triple XL. Go on. You know you want it.
No, I don't think I do.
Okay. No, it's good. It's episodic. It's light. It's just a bit too long for its own good.
Why are you laughing?
No.
No?
No,
we're above that, are we?
Just
since when?
You laughed at 12 Men Inside Amy Schumer.
And he laughed at The Longest Ride.
I laughed at The Longest Ride because one of you was bound to, and I just thought I'd beat you, Pippi at the post.
Okay. But yeah, so no. Summer blockbuster where Channing Tatum's abs are the money shot.
Yeah. So we were talking about this on Twitter the other day. And yeah, so Ronan Doyle did a review on the site, and it is it's rather good, as anything that's written by Ronan Doyle is. So yeah, I recommend checking out Magic Mike XXL, and people seem to be. So.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, they're also checking out what's
at
number 4.
At number 4, it's Terminator Genisys. Oh, dear God.
Which I have to admit, I'm very disappointed is not a musical biopic about the disillusion of the band Genesis and the conflict between Phil Collins.
Phil Collins is a robot.
It all makes
makes sense.
Yeah, he is the drum machine, baby. He is the drum machine.
I can feel it
coming in the air tonight.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord.
It's better than the last two Terminator films.
Really?
Damning with faint praise.
And I think you're actually being generous compared to most reviews.
Yeah, I didn't hate it with the same burning passion that I disliked Jurassic World. I didn't like it. I thought it had some interesting aspects to it. in that it seems to critique itself, really. It makes my commentary on it redundant.
IndieWire had a post, and I mean, IndieWire done a number of these posts lately, and they're actually in danger of...
Oh, turning into clickbait!
...of losing their audience, but they did a thing about the 7 reasons why Terminator Genesis is everything that's wrong with Hollywood.
Well, okay, fair criticism, but seriously, lose the clickbait angle. Yeah. That is bad.
You won't believe the 7 reasons why. What Terminator Genesis doesn't want you to know?
A cop just found a naked man standing in the middle of an abandoned car park at night with sparks flying around.
You won't believe what happened next! Oh, there's a yeah.
Clickbait the movie is coming into my...
Wasn't that, yeah, movie Click 42,
on,
no?
Yeah. Click on me if you want to live.
Well, I'm saying that you can market it entirely with clickbait trailers, you know? Yeah. Just 5-second trailers.
Yeah. You won't believe what happens next.
To see, go to theaters August 14th.
I really hate, like, is it just me or has, like, clickbait become more of a thing in the past year or two? Like,
oh, God, yeah.
No, yeah.
It's the BuzzFeedification of modern society. Yeah.
Yes, thank you, BuzzFeed.
Anyway, actually...
The aforementioned Jurassic
World.
It's a lumbering dinosaur.
A lumbering dinosaur that's worth $3.8 million at the Irish box office to date.
Yeah, and it's not even going to be the biggest film of the year.
True. Yeah. But then again, it is going up against Star Wars for that title.
Yes.
So I don't think it's going to be too worried about that somehow.
Yeah. Although, in fairness, it does mean that we're going to get an entire new trilogy of Jurassic Park films.
If the next one opens with Chris Pratt getting eaten... I'm all for it.
No, or Compy's eating the high heels.
Just feeding them to them.
Oh, dear.
But don't worry, the T-Rex was old. That's why I couldn't outrun her in the high heels. Also, probably the T-Rex was wearing high heels, so I forget now. It's all sort of blurred together.
Great big size 99s.
Yeah. What's
T-Regina.
Yeah.
Female dinosaurs.
She is the T-Rex female, I think.
Yeah. T. Regina.
Yeah.
Next.
Okay, fine.
Ted 2 enters in the second spot, barely missing out on taking the
oh,
spot.
Barely. Yeah. I think it was a pun.
I think it was. Ready, Teddy, go. Oh, God. No. Ready, get stuffed.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't bear this.
All jokes funnier than those that are in Ted 2.
Yeah, well, okay.
That's unfair. It's...
It has, like, 3 good jokes.
Wow.
No,
3?
It's overstretched. Like, it's another example of, like, I don't get... We were talking about this a couple of weeks ago with Jay, where it was like, why are you making movies longer now when they don't need to be?
Because it makes people think they're epic.
But, I mean, like, less screenings in a day.
But one of the main reasons that films are trending longer is that you no longer have rushes. You no longer have a finite amount of film. You can film for as long as you want, and you can find the funny in, you know, these extended Judd Apatow like takes. You know, so
right, but that doesn't work when you're Ted and you're a Seth MacFarlane product.
I didn't mind the first Ted. I
how
don't think
much riffing do you think that they did? They
yeah, like, how...
Loads of it.
They
were crazy.
Somewhere there...
But do the...
20 hours...
Yeah, somewhere there...
Do
the riffing
like people used to do. Do all the takes you can, and then pick the best one.
I think they did. I think they did, Phil, and that's the tragedy of the piece. I'm going to be honest, I didn't mind the first Ted. I quite liked it. It was one of the Guardians' top 10 films of the year. But the sequel is...
what?
You don't hear this, no? I don't know whether it was number 1 or number 2, but it was the surprise... It was the surprise pick of the Guardians' top films of the year.
I know, it's weird.
To the fact machine!
But then again, Peter Bradshaw gave 5 stars to Only God Forgives, so I'm always weary of that.
But no, like, I think that... Yeah, and I liked it better when it was a Star Trek episode. Seth MacFarlane being Seth MacFarlane, it is all ruthlessly pilfered from sources that, you know, are very geek-friendly, to the point where the climax takes place at Comic-Con, so you can fit in all the pop culture references.
Wow, just when I thought it wasn't childish and boyish enough.
Yeah, I know. Don't worry, they have, it's great, there aren't characters so much as there are setups for unfunny jokes. Like, Amanda Seyfried plays a lawyer who is pot-smoking and cool, so she can be, like, the potential love interest for Mark Wahlberg.
Because anything else just would not be worthy.
Yeah. Ugh. But, she's also pop culture illiterate, so the film can make jokes at her expense. No, wait, it gets better. But, she can also take part in an extended 3-minute riff on The Breakfast Club, despite the fact that she does not know who Captain Kirk is. There's a sense that it's not so much a story with characters as it is a bunch of stuff that the writers thought was highly amusing.
For the listeners at home, I am repeatedly banging my head against a pillar here because it sounds about as much fun as Ted 2.
Yes. But hey, civil rights story, allegory, very timely. Gay rights, teddy bear rights.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to speed up now.
In case.
Have I drawn blood yet? I'm sitting here until I do.
Okay.
Until you stop talking about Ted 2.
Okay, let's stop talking about Ted 2.
Number one at the box office and completing a hat-trick for Universal, which is the first time it's ever happened. That one studio has had 1, 2, and 3 at the box office.
Wow, well done.
And Universal are having a...
They're having a good year.
27% of the total American box office is Universal.
Wow.
Yes, and it's a record year as well. So,
Universal isn't so much a brand name as a statement of intent.
Here's the thing, no superhero franchise, not one.
Yeah.
And they're the number one studio at the box office.
Is this the end of superhero films? A hot take coming soon.
You won't believe what happens next.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
No. Coming out of Comic-Con weekend, it most definitely is not.
No.
But hey, there's a Ryan Reynolds superhero film coming up. Everybody wants a Ryan Reynolds superhero film.
The last three were fantastic.
Yeah. But yeah, we should talk about Minions, maybe.
Minions is number one, yeah, because we hadn't mentioned it yet. Yeah, Minions is number one still. So.
Yeah, it's third week in a row.
Yep.
Yeah. And
there's no end to the little yellow
Tic Tacs.
They're the cutest little Tic Tacs.
And Pantone has now come out with Minion Yellow. It is now a colour.
What? Really?
Yes. To go with Coca-Cola Red and T-Mobile Purple, we now have Minion Yellow.
I'm actually not that surprised.
You gotta feel sorry for Steve Carell.
There's a finite amount of numbers in.
Hexadecimal sort of.
That there are. We shouldn't be assigning any of them to copyrighted.
No. But then again, how hard can it be to come up with Minion Yellow? It's essentially just banana.
Banana.
Ba 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 ba.
That is a cute song. Yeah.
they are cute and lovable. There's
quite a backlash beginning to come against the Minions.
I wonder why. Yeah. Because it's successful. Yeah.
But also because it's everywhere.
Yeah, I think that
I think when I'm clicking onto like vulture.com and seeing links to Minion Erotica, I think perhaps we've gone. Yeah, there we go. Get that image out of your head.
I hope you're joking.
Oh no,
Vulture. All the Minions are male.
Don't discriminate. You can have a rainbow of all one color.
I'm saying that it's going to be fairly one-dimensional erotica.
Yeah, the dialogue. I imagine the dialogue is not great.
Okay, I am stopping. No, I'm stopping this conversation right now. Right now. Okay. If I'm talking about Universal, anything but this.
This is quite horrible.
Okay.
To put it into context, Minions made 9 times the amount of money that Song of the Sea made. In its third week,
yeah.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah.
So,
and, it's just...
Drew's not coming back, I don't think.
What?
Drew's not coming back.
Gru.
There we go. See, I've already forgotten.
Knocked over!
Is that Steve Carell's best big screen role in recent memory?
Foxcatcher.
Oh, yeah, good point. Good, touche, well played.
Wow, that was
awesome. How quickly we forget. How quickly we forget. And by we, I mean me.
And you watched it when? Last week?
I watched it last week, actually, yes. Hold on, I'm embarrassed. I completely forgot the Muppets Most Wanted. I think I'm...
But that's understandable. Forgetting Steve Carell, the Foxcatcher, is that's Jason. You know, that haunts his dreams.
Yeah.
Anyway, on to new releases.
Okay. Now, this might be an improvement.
We'll start with the big one, with the biggest one of the week, the one that me and Darren have seen. It's Ant-Man.
The superhero movie you always knew you needed.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's always going to be the superhero movie that was almost directed by Edgar Wright.
That's it. We'll get that out of the way first. Edgar Wright's fingerprints are all over it. Oh, my God, they are.
But precious little of his talent. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's competent.
It's got it was basically a director for hire.
Yeah.
That's what he came into to film.
To make it
what
work.
What was already there.
Yeah. So. Like, it is very much, it's the definition of film as product, in that you needed this in this slot. So Edgar Wright wasn't going to deliver that.
Yeah. So, but that's quite a stretch to go from somebody who gives you something as very as visually distinct as, say, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. So you go from the director of Shaun of the Dead and Scott Pilgrim versus the World to from the director of Down with Love and Bring It On.
Yes, man.
Yes, man. Poor Peyton. Hey, it gave the world Bradley Cooper.
Oh, now I really hate this film.
No, the trailer for Joy actually looks decent. So,
yeah.
David O. Russell
calling the only three people in his phone book.
But don't worry, he managed to get Jennifer Lawrence released from slavery, which you know is exactly the same thing as being franchised to two movie franchises. They're exactly the same thing, people. David O. Russell does not exaggerate.
God.
Yes, we were talking about Ant-Man.
So it has Paul Rudd as Paul Rudd.
Yeah. Written by Paul Rudd as well.
Yeah, so
is that
Paul Rudd is at a lot.
Prime of Paul Rudd.
Full Rudder, if you will.
Basically, what they're doing is that they're hanging a movie on the likability of Paul Rudd,
which is not a bad strategy.
No, it's not.
But no, like, I mean,
Instead of nuancing his character, they just allow Paul Rudd to fill in with himself.
With Paul Rudd, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a lovable schlub. Yeah. You know, he's a man who, you know, never got any opportunities. He's all messed up. He wants one chance to prove he can make
down
it.
Down on his luck. He only went to jail because he did the right thing.
And
he's not a thief, he's a burglar.
Yeah, because thievery involves the threat of violence.
And he's not that kind of guy.
Yeah. It is so incredibly family friendly. It's so incredibly Sandlot, which is amazing, considering, like, the source material is, like, famous for being Ant-Man. If you ask any comic book fan what they know about Ant-Man, he's the domestic abusive superhero.
Yeah.
That's like the big Ant-Man moment.
Yeah, I'm guessing they're not going to work that angle in.
That's why the sideline hangs Pym really early on.
They do, and they strip out anything that might possibly tie back into him being the comic book character and replace it with stuff you liked from Iron Man and stuff you liked from Captain America.
That's why Ultron is no longer Hank Pym creation. He's Iron Man's creation, or Tony Stark's creation. So that you didn't have to tie that to him as well. So basically, the film opens with a quite exceptional piece of dating back in time.
Oh, the special effects are really good.
Mother of God, Michael Douglas looks like he could make
Wall Street again.
Too,
there was no Wall Street.
You make Michael Douglas look young.
Yeah. Er.
Young, wow.
Er. Like he's about 50.
Yeah, which is amazing.
It's incredible.
That is kind of amazing.
And it's the opening sequence.
That's what Jesus Jones is thinking. Where were you five years ago?
Which is interesting, because the opening sequence very much sort of, like, we're talking about this idea of, like, movie as product. It's a TV teaser.
Oh, it's brilliant. It sets it up in a half-completed Triskelion, so you've got that.
But it comes before the block. It features a bunch of crossover characters.
Yeah, it's Asian characters in there. You have...
John Slattery.
John Slattery as Howard Stark. You have...
Bad guy of the film. Generic corporate bad guy of the film.
Yeah, but he was in it before. So
was he?
Was a callback.
He was in Iron Man 2.
He was in Iron Man 2.
Everybody
was
in Iron
John
Man 2.
It's John Slattery.
Not John Slattery. Generic sleazy corporate guy.
General dude who's in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
It's not really? John Slattery.
Far too complicated.
Okay, but anyway.
The point is Ant-Man good?
Right from the get-go, you're in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You are centered in it. You see the Triskelion. You have characters that you are already familiar with. And in walks new character, Michael Douglas. as a young Hank Pym.
As like Wall Street Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
It's like, it's great. And it's amazing to think how far you've come from Tron.
Yeah. X-Men 3.
Or X-Men 3. Or, yeah. Or Wolverine. What was Origins?
Or Salvation.
Yes.
You know what? This all makes sense. Because, I mean, didn't Marvel get their slogan from Michael Douglas? Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
Anyway. Well, that, here, I mean...
So, you know, you have Paul Rudd, you have Michael Peña, who is hilarious.
Michael Peña is amazing. I would watch Michael Peña's Ant-Man. I would be like, yeah.
Michael Peña is hilarious. He is incredibly Mexican. But
yes, he's also part of the most ethnically diverse team of characters that exist in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But
also the most stereotypically ethnically diverse.
Yes, and also the only group comprised entirely of ex-offenders. Draw from that what you will. We really need a superhero film that doesn't star a white man.
Yeah. Although one of the better sequences in the film involves one of the Marvel superheroes who isn't the white man.
Yes,
so
yes.
Without giving anything away.
They connect it back to one of the pre-existing Marvel Which is given away in the trailer.
Yes, the character features in the trailer. Yeah. But it's also, you get the sense, this is the Ant-Man butting up against her, Edgar Wright's Vision butting up against Marvel.
Yeah, because they also drop a line in, why don't we just call the Avengers? And, you know, I don't want this technology in the hands of Tony Stark is essentially
the movie is
a good answer.
The movie is basically the original Iron Man all over again. It is. Corey Stoller is basically Jeff Bridges without the beard.
He is exactly the same character. He is...
Yeah, he's bald, corporate, and he usurps one of the primary characters out of the business so he can sell it to terrorists.
Yeah, but Hope, Evangeline Lilly's character, who is the daughter of Hank Pym, is less of a character than Pepper Potts. I mean,
which is quite an accomplishment. And it's great because she's actually, the character is based on, a female superhero. She literally exists to be a love interest and daughter. She's defined exclusively by her relationship to the two primary male characters. Three primary male characters.
The only other female character of note in it is Judy Greer, again!
Playing the same character from Jurassic World. Concerned Mother number 4.
You just reminded me that there's a very serious argument to be made for Pepper Potts being the best work Gwyneth Paltrow's ever done.
Yeah. I can kind of see that. Iron Man 3.
So for all of it, it's a lot of fun. So as much criticism as you can lay at Ant-Man's door, it's still fun.
It's enjoyable. No, it's functional. It's built to studio specifications, which is a shame because you look at it and it's always going to be the movie that was almost an Edgar Wright movie.
True.
And you can see kind of traces of that.
Oh, some of it. The fight in the briefcase.
Yeah, is amazing. Yeah. And I love the climax of it without spoiling anything. It has the best third act of any Marvel film since the original Avengers, I would argue.
Yes. Yes, it does. Because it takes everything... Small, there's no city being threatened to be destroyed. It's a house.
Now that sounds great.
No, it is. That's an idea that came from Edgar.
It's a kid's bedroom, essentially, is the battleground.
And it's done in miniature in keeping with the themes of the film. And basically, the thing, you talk about superhero saturation, people getting tired of superhero films, which is the big think piece that everybody's going to write at every point.
The big think piece.
Yeah. Freudian slip. Freudian slip. But yeah, you know, every year people are talking about how tired people are of superhero films.
They're making them.
Avengers is in the top 10, and the Avengers Age of Ultron is in the top 10 highest grossing films of all time.
Yeah. but I mean, I think that one of the more interesting things is the fact that you do occasionally get, the more successful films, superhero films of the past couple of years have been films that have sort of played with the genre in terms of what you could do with it. So, obviously The Dark Knight takes a superhero film and, inserts it into the Los Angeles urban thriller sort of genre.
Or Captain America Winter Soldier is a
World War II film.
It's the first Avengers World War II, or Captain America Winter Soldier is a spy thriller.
Yeah, and, Guardians of the Galaxy is, it's a cosmic space opera.
It's a lot of things.
Where the central metaphor is about, an arrested childhood fantasy. I think that Ant-Man has that nice angle where it's basically, it is the story about, being the hero to your daughter that every parent wants to be. Yeah, so it has a nice relatable
metaphor.
It's a heist movie.
Yeah.
I don't think the heist movie is as well executed as it could be.
No, it's not.
I think that's the kind of bit where I look at it and I go, if it were an Edgar Wright film, this would be amazing. There are little bits, there's the bits where they're narrating the story of how...
That is genius.
How the information sort of filtered through...
It's Michael Peña talking and his mouth... What he's saying
dialogue,
has been said by everybody else. And it is
sort of cycles through all the 6 degrees of separation it takes to get the information to get from A to B. So you have like all
my cousin's sister's brother's first husband and said this,
and he's talking, but he's talking with the sort of with the lip movements in sync with Michael Pennett, sort of, and he said like this, and I did, I don't know, and it's great.
It really is,
and you're like, that's the kind of movie that I think Edgar Wright would have made. And I'm less keen about the bits that are like generic Marvel studio stuff. So like
how it fits in the universe, yeah. Or how it's made to fit in.
Yeah, like where you do have that action sequence with an Avenger, which exists solely so you have a crossover.
The sequence itself is good, but it doesn't fit.
Yeah, it's not with the film.
Like, no,
it's like, and particularly because the actual point of the scene, the thing that like Paul Rudd is trying to do in the scene,
yeah,
takes place entirely off screen. So the entire point of the sequence, as far as the film's concerned, is the crossover.
Yeah, no, that's it, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's a mini heist within a heist movie, and you don't see the heist.
The heist, yeah, because the main attraction is not the heist. And you're like, this defeats the purpose of it. And like, yeah, and so like you have the, like, I really like the final act, which is all set in a child's bedroom,
yeah.
Which is like innovative for a Marvel film, where the tendency is always to go larger, to the point where you have Michael Douglas joking about dropping cities on stuff.
Yeah.
But before you get to that point, you have to have the obligatory Marvel third act where everything gets blown up big time, and you feel like that's not anywhere near as entertaining or as like emotionally effective.
No, when the miniature of that building is being destroyed,
that's much more powerful than actually watching the large scale city destruction.
Yeah.
And I think I think Ant-Man is a good film. It's a competently made film.
It's right in the middle.
Yeah, it's solidly, and it's a perfectly average and inoffensive superhero
film. It sounds like Marvel by the book.
It is. And that's not a good thing, but it's not a bad thing. Like, I mean,
it's a thing. It's enough.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable.
And I mean,
it's enjoyable to escape his time at the cinema. Yeah. And
people told me the same thing about Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'm still smarter.
Guardians is better.
Yeah, Guardians is a lot better.
Well, then I'm not going to see Ant-Man.
But, and I mean, like, it's, we talk and we rag on, like, Marvel for this whole creative control thing and squeezing people.
Yeah, we do.
We do. And admittedly, they deserve it. But I also think there's something interesting in the way that they've taken the conventions of the medium that they're used to working in comic books and transposed it to the cinematic storytelling.
Essentially, what they're doing is it's long-form storytelling
in cinema, which is... Like, I think
that's unprecedented.
Yes,
you know?
I think it's incredibly innovative, and not to the point where they get credit for it, because it is crashly commercial. But it's like there's a commitment to it, to the point where Ant-Man exists primarily for the sake of it existing, so you can have like legacy characters, or you can have like these concepts which you wouldn't normally have in big blockbusters.
Yeah,
I think that's interesting. I think structurally it's fascinating.
It's how did balance that money play it? Because I mean, the thing is,
well, occasionally you end up with Thor: The Dark World.
No, but Thor: The Dark World happened in isolation. I mean, you know, it doesn't. Thor: The Dark World exists in a universe outside.
And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, you know, it's no. This is everything's heading for, you know.
For the next Captain America film,
and then onwards onto the next Avengers. But the next Avengers is going to be
a mess.
Nightmare.
Yeah. Well, given how like
just with that
Age of, given how difficult Age of Ultron was with like the cast that it had.
It's going to be twice the size in...
Yeah, it's going to be twice the size in scope.
And two films.
Yeah, and two films.
Do you know what way that's going to happen?
Yeah. Set up big kablooey.
They're going to be defeated at the end of the first one and come back in the second.
Yeah, you're passing Empire Strikes Back setup. Yeah.
But no.
So, Ant-Man...
I recommend Ant-Man to anyone who likes that, you know...
Of the big summer blockbuster films, it's probably the best one that's not Mad Max at the moment. If you can find Mad Max, go see it.
You can't. I think it's out of cinemas now.
Really?
Yeah.
Even if you've already seen it, you should go see it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Anyway, onto a film that you really, really, really don't want to see. It's The Gallows.
Yay, generic teen horror.
Found footage.
Oh, no. Why?
Like, found footage is cheap, right?
Yeah.
But like, not found footage is also not that much more expensive, surely, right? And
it's a horror film. None of them are that expensive.
Yeah. And found footage imposes all these horrible conventions upon you. If you're not interested in using them, why use them? Like, I mean, like, what was it, End of Watch we were talking about last week?
Where
it's literally like, found footage is great up until the point where we need to do some stuff that we can't really do in found footage, so just stop doing found footage.
The one movie recently that used it well.
Unfollowed?
What?
No, what's...
No, It follows. No, I was going to go. No, I was going to go with Josh Trank's.
Chronicle, yes.
I was a big fan of Chronicle.
Yeah, Chronicle is the one that, because basically he becomes so obsessed with himself, he turns all of people's smartphones.
No, it's very clever, and that's the commentary. Yeah.
And so, it actually committed to that idea of always being using a camera, a small, a handheld camera,
and phones, I think
whatever.
We live in the GoPro generation, so it is possible for you to do something with found footage.
Yeah, no, like, I think Chronicle's clever because as much as it takes place inside the footage shot, it also takes, you're where the characters feel like they exist outside that as well, and you can imply that.
A superhero movie on that small, a relatively small scale of filming, but, the usual big hoo-ha of superheroes.
But the gallows.
Yeah, the gallows is.
Gallows currently
should be for the gallows.
Yeah, it currently has 4.5 on IMDb.
Yeah, 1 star across
which
the board.
Which is
so
amazing for an IMDb score. Rarely dips below 5.
And a 30 Metacritic. So
30 Metacritic is surprisingly high for a film like that. Yeah, I put that on the poster if I were.
But basically, a tragedy at small town high school play. 20 years later, students try to recreate the play to honor the victims,
the crucible,
there are things.
It is not. No.
don't leave us hanging there, Philip.
No, there isn't anything goody about it.
Then
loose noose.
Yeah. So then we have a number of ones that are smaller films. So the president is showing in the IFI. Yes.
It's about a told from the point of view of a dictator whose country has just been taken over by revolutionaries.
Yeah, and it's
sounds interesting. That sounds like such a comic. Ooh, sounds very interesting, isn't it?
Yes, quite.
I haven't seen it. I don't know.
I have nothing I can possibly add to this conversation. insightful.
Well, it's the same. It's the guy who received the Galway Hooker Award, the Iranian director Mohsen
Makhmalbaf.
Yeah, he directed it. So the president was shown.
Is it mostly confidence?
He's a language student, but the president showed at the FLA as well. So now it's opening here in the IFI. So he was here on Monday for a special screening of it. So it's a French, Georgian, German, and UK co-production.
Nice.
Yep. So then
old president and a cabinet.
Another one that's all out in the IFI is The Wonders.
This is the thing about the release schedules that annoys me. This got a lot of praise and won a prize at Cannes last year.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it takes these things so long.
It won the Grand Jury Prize at Cannes last year, which is what The Lobster won this year.
There you go.
So we'll see The Lobster this time next year.
It's out in November,
yeah,
I think.
It being an Irish one would actually make it.
Well, thank goodness for that, eh?
Yep. So, this is a cinema verite style film. So, about a young female character, which is the hallmark of Alice Rohrwacher. She likes that sort of thing.
Hmm.
So, it's got some fairy tale elements to it.
It's based around these three young sisters who are, they have. Like you say, ducky very say, ooh, I see they're having a feast of ice cream.
Yeah, so they're basically trying to get out into the country, or they're out in the country and they're trying to survive because they're city girls and stuff.
Yeah, one of the motifs of the film is Bees, the oldest girl who is also essentially raising the rest of the family. They have an act for breeding bees.
Yeah, the father is a beekeeper. So,
it's supposed to be very sweet, very likeable.
Like honey.
Like, well spotted.
Right.
There's a lot of buzz about it.
Yeah. So we'll be talking about this next week, won't we?
That in,
it may be.
Is there a sting in the tail?
I really doubt it'll chart. Anyway, Salt of the Earth is out in the IFI and Lighthouse.
Oh, this really needs to chart because
this is Wim Wenders.
Thank goodness Wim Wenders is back. This is one of his best in a while. I know a lot of people are hot about Pina, maybe me not so much, but this is his documentary on Sebastiano Salgado, acclaimed documentarian and photographer. And it's a very simply told look back at Salgado, his life and his career. So what it lacks in kind of innovation in its structure, it makes up for with the sheer power of Salgado's work. If you've ever seen any of his exhibitions or collections of work. Like, it is stark. He shoots almost entirely in black and white, and some of the most harrowing stuff, it really packs a punch. Like, he's taken, he's had exhibitions that are based around, say, famine in sub-Saharan Africa, the First Gulf War, refugees in former Yugoslavia, and there's always a stark and brutal humanity to it. Like, he went, for example, he went to Ethiopia with Médecins Sans Frontières in the mid-1980s and took pictures of people dying of cholera, like dying before him, bodies wasting away, and
what you're saying is barrel of laughs.
Oh yeah. Like, the film doesn't hold back on showing these pictures, and they are so stark and powerful, they sear in the mind. Like, when he went to the Gulf during the First Gulf War, he was there with people working on trying to save the oil rigs, and you just get these pictures of huge geysers of fire and people just being rained down upon with burning oil, and it is really, really incredible imagery.
It won three of the kids too, so...
Yeah, but besides
forget
that...
forget Minions.
But besides that, Salgado himself plays a very active part in telling his story, and he's a very likeable character, and he's a great into a magnificent body of work. And Wenders, he tells... the way it's shot, it's all very much done in admiration of Salgado's work. And I think you'll come out just as impressed as he is.
Cool.
So, yeah, one for the kids.
And so you have a four-star review up on the website.
I do
so,
indeed.
Yeah. And Assault on the Senses?
Oh. Oh, God.
Yes, indeed. Very grounded. So, very down to earth.
So the one that I know that you two guys will really want to know about is Thomas and Friends, Sodor's Legend of Lost Treasure.
Oh,
so,
boy.
I was quite amazed. This has got an Oscar caliber cast here.
Yeah.
Eddie Redmayne's. Is this his second cinematic? No, his first cinematic role since winning the Oscar, right?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, after Jupiter Ascending, which came out during campaign season. If that couldn't derail him, I don't know what will.
Derail!
Yeah, it's right there. And John Hurt as a pirate. Come on.
John Hurt's in this thing.
Yeah. How offended you sound.
No.
Eddie Redmayne.
I'm offended because it means I might have to go and see it.
It's Thomas the Tank Engine. You're not going to see it. You don't have children.
Wait, oh, God. Why?
Well, look, it doesn't have Alec Baldwin in it this time.
Well, that's
it's lost.
Or Peter Fonda.
Yeah. Oh, so can you imagine being there in that pitch meeting? So, Peter, one of the greatest actors of your generation. We've got the perfect project.
Of
any generation. We've got the perfect project lined up for you.
We've got the most famous Baldwin brother and the little girl from Mrs. Doubtfire. Yeah. You in? What's it about? It's about a talking train whose mouth never moves.
Although,
you'll be the engine of this story.
I'm pretty sure this is the second best film to feature Thomas the Tank Engine this week.
Quite possibly, yes. Yeah, he gets it. Because he made the remark. But yes.
Yeah. Oh. Other films that are out this week include one, includes Selfless. So Tarsem Singh.
Oh no.
And Ben Kingsley. Yeah.
So, hey, oh, wait, Kingsley, no.
And Matthew Good.
Yes, and Ryan Reynolds.
It's like the perfect storm.
And Michelle Dockery.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I guess that was the thing that dragged it down. Yeah, Tarsem Singh, just in case anybody has forgotten, is the director of such cinematic classics as Immortals and The Cell.
What about The Fall?
The Fall's actually okay, yeah, but The Cell is the thing most people are going to remember him for, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, because nobody went to the Immortals.
Yeah, people made the smart choice.
I have it on Blu-ray.
Henry Cavill.
It was €2.
Yeah.
You know what?
Did they pay you €2 to take it off their hands?
No, I got the Steelbook for €2.
Do you know what the worst part is? The Cell would look really good on Blu-ray. The man has a great eye, but he cannot tell a story to save his life.
Yeah. Like, I mean, if you're watching a Singh movie, you're not watching it for the story.
Well, you could actually watch The Cell pretty effectively with the sound off.
Yes.
This synopsis for Selfless, because this is going to win Oscars, right?
Oh, no, hold on. You've got to pronounce it right. It's got self/less, like Face-Off.
Yeah, but if you put self/less into any browser, it tries to bring you to a bloody website. It is really irritating. Anyway.
Business tycoon.
Internet nerd complaints.
Synopsis, right. Business tycoon and billionaire Damien Hayes, Ben Kingsley, is a master of his own universe. Until he encounters a disease he cannot defeat, cancer. Oh, yeah.
Oh, this is like an Oscar prestige picture.
Yeah. His only hope is a radical medical procedure called shedding, in which his consciousness is transferred into a healthy body.
Oh, hey, it's like Transcendence. Everyone loves Transcendence, right?
What this is Freaky Friday gone mad.
That's going on the poster as we speak.
After the procedure, Damien, now using the alias Edward Hale, a.k.a. Mark.
What?
Well,
what?
No, Mark is the original guy.
Oh, so, okay.
Now he's, Ryan Reynolds. So, Ben Kingsley.
It is like Face Off with Ryan Reynolds and Ben Kingsley.
I want to take your consciousness off.
Yeah, so starts in New Orleans, but is plagued by disturbing images. When he digs deeper into the body's mysterious origin, he learns something some will kill to keep it secret.
Oh no, I was in that Wolverine Origins film! Yeah. I'm an unbankable box office star.
I was in Blade Trinity. I was in Green
And
Lantern.
That wasn't even the worst superhero film I made!
I was in R.I.P.D. And yes, I'm making a fifth comic book film.
Don't worry.
And of course, Scarlett Johansson. And Mary Blake Lively.
And Mary Blake, I think that's okay. I think we'll skip and scrape a pass on that one.
Have a beautiful child. Yeah.
So what you're saying is Deadpool is the Blake Lively of superhero films.
Right, so we have Ryan Reynolds, we have Ben Kingsley, we have Matthew Good, and we have Michelle Dockery, we have Victor Garber.
Victor Garber!
Oh, he will star in stuff for food.
Oh, poor Victor Garber.
I love Victor Garber, but like he was also in that Big Game film as well.
Which one?
That's the one with Samuel Jackson
as
the president, which I really enjoyed. But yeah, it's a bunch of famous actors standing in a room.
One of Victor Garber's claims to fame is that he gives the best performance in Titanic, so we'll give him that.
Yeah. So this has been dramatically...
Billy Zane?
Right.
You're funny. Let's move on.
So the thing about Selfless is that he has been dramatically undersold, and nobody knows that's out. Right, so...
I wonder why.
Other film, the last...
So this one's going to break that Ryan Reynolds hole. This is going to be the one.
The voices. It was amazing. The last film of the week is True Story, a mystery thriller by Rupert Gould.
Now, talking about films that have been undersold, I didn't know this existed until a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, with Jonah Hill, James Franco...
That might be why.
Felicity Jones, Gretchen Mol.
How do you not sell this? Like, how is this unsaleable?
I'll be honest, the story sounds a bit hokey despite the fact that it's based on real events.
Yeah, it's based on the guy who was on the FBI's most wanted list for murdering his wife and three children. And he went on the run to Mexico. It is The Fugitive.
And with Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill and James Franco, and they somehow managed not to... James Franco is the fugitive in this particular instance.
Oh, okay.
Jonah Hill is the ambitious and successful reporter who is hunting him down. Yeah.
You should probably leave that to law enforcement.
Tommy Lee Jones is somewhere waiting by a phone.
Yeah. I didn't kill my wife and kids. Oh, wait, I did.
Yeah, so.
I can only imagine Jonah Hill trying a Tommy Lee Jones impression. He'd be reciting those lines from The Fugitive. Okay, let's look in every farmhouse, outhouse, in-house...
I've crunched the numbers here and I've
I like Jonah Hill. As far as
two-time Academy Award.
As far as Frat Pack actors go, wait, he's younger than Frat Pack, isn't he?
Yes.
What do we call them now? Okay, Atapauian.
Yeah,
he's Atapauian. Of those, he is like the prize stud.
Well, he's a two-time Oscar nominee.
Yeah.
Apatow world, everything's okay.
Unless you're a 30-year-old man, in which case you face the biggest and gravest choices that exist in the world. Existential ones.
Yeah. Now here's the thing, right? So, Academy Award nominee, James Franco. Two-time Academy Award nominee, Jonah Hill, and they can't sell this well. And Academy Award nominee Felicity Jones, who is the only person who's mentioned in the trailer
as not an
Academy Award nominee.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Poor Felicity.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Sexism in Hollywood. Who would have thunk it?
Yeah. Was it Amanda Seyfried paid 10% of her male co-star in one of her earlier films? Guess which one? I'm going to say Justin Timberlake in, what was that one?
Out of Time.
In Time. The Andrew Nichol one.
Yeah.
Yes.
The one everybody forgot. Yes. Anyway, on that note.
On that bombshell, we will leave it there for the week.
Okay.